I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mark Reitzes. Mark is the regional president for Huntington National Bank, and Mark Huntington is so graciously the presenting sponsor for the upcoming Association for Corporate Growth Awards, which is occurring on Wednesday, May the 16th, down at the Hyatt at 5 o'clock in the evening. The Association for Corporate Growth really celebrates this whole function is celebrating companies and businesses that are out there doing deals. What are you seeing in your work at Huntington in terms of companies doing deals? Is it more brisk?
Yes, it is. We have now termed Huntington Bank is in the Midwest, and we're no longer calling it the Rust Belt. We're calling it the Recovery Belt. And by so many metrics, it is leading the national economy, not only in job growth, but also importing and exporting, particularly in the manufacturing sector, automobiles. And we're also seeing it in early stages of new type of energy development, shale development, particularly up in the northeast section of Ohio, as well as throughout West Virginia.
There are a lot of people stepping out of the comfort zone again, taking a risk, doing a deal. And that's what we're celebrating for these Association for Corporate Growth Awards, aren't we?
We sure are. And you know, it's interesting that I think there's been a lot of pent-up demand on the sidelines since the banking crisis occurred back in 08, with the financial crisis, I should say. And so a lot of deals were on the sidelines for many years. And I think so there's pent-up demand. Buyers and sellers' expectations of what prices should be have come more together now. And the financing ability to pull these deals together is starting to become more apparent. Financial institutions are really on the hunt to try to grow their balance sheets, particularly in such a low-yield environment. Volume of deals has become even more important for banks.
What makes a lot of sense, because a lot of corporations do have a lot of cash sitting on their balance sheets, which aren't earning a lot of money in interest. And if they can take that cash, use it, leverage it to make an acquisition that really enhances their bottom line, it just makes a lot of good financial sense.
Yes. You know, the Fed has kept interest rates low for so long. I think people are finally saying, well, end of 2014, interest rates are going to be low. I can't earn on my investments. Let's go out and do deals. And you're right, public companies are still holding record amounts of cash.
What do you look for when you make decisions about who to finance?
A lot of times, Crystal, deals are being brought to us by investment bankers. So the business, the acquirer, the one that's interested in buying a business, tends to hire someone to go out and search in some of the genre that they're interested in purchasing. And so by the time it usually comes to us, it's somewhat packaged relative to terms and things like that. Our big thing is we look strong at historical standards, how both companies have done, what are the synergies of bringing them together? Is it a strategic purchase or is it a financial purchase? The difference there being financial purchase is strictly one that's just buying it, not in the industry already, maybe a roll-up in a PE firm type of portfolio.
Private equity,
I'm sorry. Thank you. And then versus strategic, where the company's already in the business and maybe they're looking to combine, take a competitor out of the way, if you will.
Well, and that is very exciting. And again, we are celebrating companies who have done this past year and the last few years, the Association for Corporate Growth Dealmaker of the Year. And I will have to say, it is probably the who's who in the business world here in our Cincinnati region that attends this event.
Absolutely. The who's who of the zoo does show up at this, Crystal. And we're very, very, at Huntington, we're very proud and honored to be the premier sponsor.
And if folks would like more information about the event or if they would like to attend, it is down at the Hyatt. It's on May the 16th from 5 until 9. Mark, you will be there. I will be there. The number to call is 866-500-ACGC, or you can just visit acgcincinnati.org. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mark Reitzes. Mark is the regional president for Huntington National Bank, and Huntington has, for years now, been the presenting sponsor for this remarkable event that's occurring down at the Hyatt on May 16th. It's the Association for Corporate Growth Dealmaker of the Year Awards, and it will be a huge event. We're celebrating five or six different organizations and entrepreneurs who have been very involved in the merger and acquisition area in the last few years. Why is it important for Huntington to be the presenting sponsor for this?
These companies that we're celebrating and these entrepreneurs, Crystal, they're the ones that really are leading the Midwest economy, if you will, out of the doldrums. And it's all about employment and driving the business climate, driving the economic viability of our area. So we think it's an important organization, but also we're very grateful and honored to be part of the process, if you will, in honoring these companies that are doing so much for our area.
And some of the award winners this year, just to quickly name them, because it is a huge honor to be selected as an award winner. Maybe you can just share a few of the awardees.
These are very familiar names. We have Ampac, there's been Promach, Hillenbrand, a large corporate company, Home Care by Blackstone. We've honored Rick Maxwell as an entrepreneur, The Brandery, which is a financial service provider, along with North Creek Mezzanine, which provides sub-debt financing to help acquisitions get done. So there's just a sample of some of the, not only the companies, but individuals that really make a difference in our community.
To that point, Mark, I know that you are the regional president for Huntington National Bank, but Huntington is really all over the Midwest. You actually are the largest SBA lender in the state of Ohio, so you're right there in the front lines in terms of what businesses are doing in this economy. How do we stack up here in our region with the rest of the country?
Well, you know, the Midwest economy has been a really, really good comeback story for us. It's leading the country in so many different areas relative to employment, income, consumer spending. Companies are moving into the Midwest, as we've seen, particularly with the Jobs Ohio program, as well as we're seeing this in Michigan, which is part of our footprint as well. And while large parts of the country are still slumbering, the Midwest economy is demonstrating really, really healthy growth.
It's fascinating to me, and I don't know if it's just great PR, but it seems like I can't turn on the TV these days without seeing Ohio being named at the top of some list in terms of job creation and business backing and things like that.
It is. You know, Ohio has a lot to offer, particularly in the manufacturing end related to automobile sector. So we've seen significant growth, as we know, in that sector, import, export in so many industries, and also the new energy, whether it be shale development, things up in the Northeast, as well as the Southeast part of Ohio and over into West Virginia. New forms of energy are being developed, and Ohio and West Virginia are really positioned well to take advantage of that.
And it's really remarkable, the companies that remain in the energy, I think, that is now instilled in these people because of what they've been through.
Sure has. Many of these businesses have had the opportunity to re-engineer themselves, reinvent themselves. Companies that you would normally think is just normal construction companies, getting into the energy sector has required them to retool, think about how they go to market with their business plan, and as a result, have reinvented themselves in ways they probably would have never imagined a few years ago.
All right, real quick, we are celebrating the Dealmaker of the Year Award. It's on May the 16th down at the Hyatt. If you'd like information, the number to call is 866-500-ACGC. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. I'm delighted today to have as my guest Teresa Singleton. Teresa is the Director of Protection from Abuse at the YWCA, and Jill Meyer, who is one of this year's 8 Career Women of Achievement. And Jill is the managing member here in Cincinnati in charge of Frost Brown Todd. I can remember back when I was coming up as a young professional, I would have other women who might be 10 years older than me suggest that maybe I don't get involved in that organization or choose this career path because I'm not a man. Why don't you just go do things that women can excel in? But I don't seem to hear that conversation as much. What do you think about that?
Well, I really believe that you don't hear that conversation as much anymore because of the influence that YWCA has had with Career Women of Achievement. I mean, think about it. Since 1980, we've recognized women that do extraordinary things in what was once a man's world, ranging from medical, corporate, government, law.
Jill, you actually were part of the Rising Star program at the YWCA.
I was.
Maybe you can share what that's all about.
If you want to focus on how the Y really is doing a consistent, good set of deeds, if you will, to keep women, young women, professional women focused on getting ahead, they started, I want to say it was 2002, the Rising Stars program, which is a program where they look around and identify. In fact, the women in the Career Women of Achievement Academy identify younger women who look like they're on the right course, and they're selected as rising stars at the YWCA, which has now turned into a full-blown program. But the Y provides this for young women, and as part of that as well, they become connected to this network of other powerful, interesting, smart women, so that in sticking with the motto, we lift as we climb, it's a whole group of women who've begun climbing together. So that we were, a couple of us joking the other night at the honorees dinner, that I'm one of the first ones who was a rising star, and now I'm being named a career woman of achievement. And we laughed, does that mean I've risen? and we decided, no, we're all still rising, but it is a pretty cool honor.
You're yes. always looking for ways to continue to improve yourself and the community that you live in, the organizations that you work for?
That's true. And there's so much work to be done that, you know, anything that you're interested in, or there's always something that can be done a little bit better, something a little bit different.
You are the Director of Protection Services, which is so important.
It is. Well, you know, the YWCA touches over 30,000 people in our community annually. And as my role at the YWCA is protection from abuse, which includes shelters for battered women, transitional housing for battered women and their children, educating employers about domestic violence in the workplace, working to ensure that victims of domestic violence who happen to be immigrants have information and services. But beyond that, mm-hmm. the YWCA does so much more. We have an incredible women's art gallery, job readiness, literacy programming, children's programming, youth programming.
It is absolutely wonderful.
I could go on for hours. Call the YWCA at 241-7090 or check out our website at ywcacincinnati.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Josh Deutsch. Josh is the president and the CEO of Spring Dot, which is Cincinnati's fifth largest commercial printing company. And Josh, you're also the president of Spring Dot, the company that's 108 years old. You're the fourth generation leading this organization, and it's fascinating, the story of your great-grandfather coming over here to the Cincinnati area and starting a printing company in an alley behind your current location.
Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather came through Ellis Island, as a lot of immigrants did back in the early 1900s. We have stories and documents actually at our company that shows when he got off the boat, they asked him what his last name was, and he really didn't speak any English. So he said, sprechen Sie Deutsch. He said, Deutsch, yes. And that's supposedly
that's how we got
our last name.
Oh, that's interesting.
But he finally made his way to Cincinnati and worked for the Baldwin Piano Company and lived in a halfway house, where he met another gentleman who had a hand press. And eventually he bought that hand press and made more money making business cards than he did sanding pianos. In 1904, he incorporated our company in an alley, literally between two buildings, by putting up a sign in between them.
The fascinating thing to me also about you is at the age of 29, you took over the reins of Spring Dot. Your whole culture is very much how do we help whoever it is we're trying to help, whether it be our customers, our employees, and you've got an initiative called Spring It Forward. Maybe you can talk about the community service
aspect.
Sure.
Well, you know, one thing that we like to say about our company, Spring Dot, is we're a family business. And we run our company very much like a family business. We're screaming across the walls, knocking on the walls. And one thing that we value more than everything else, what really defines us, is our people. Every printing company is a big building with a bunch of fancy equipment. But it's really the people who operate the equipment who really make the company what it is. Focusing in on that, last year we decided we wanted to branch out from just Spring Dot and really start something special. We worked a lot internally and came up with Spring It Forward, which is a whole separate kind of entity to our Spring Dot company. It has a whole separate website. Basically, what we do there is it gives us the ability. A lot of people these days, of course, because of the economy, they need things. You know, I need this printed, or a church needs that printed, or people need help, and they always come to us like they always have because we've been around mm-hmm. for a long time. But this gives us Spring It Forward gave us the ability to take that and channel it to something where we could have it live by itself.
Well, I will tell you what touched my heart. I was in my office on one Saturday busy season a few weeks ago, and here I see on YouTube your face, and you're basically responding to an individual in one of the southern states who had put everything he had into his hardware store. He was about to lose his house because he had this beautiful hardware store, but no sales. You go online and you respond to him and you tell him that you want to help him, that you're going to print brochures and cards so that he could distribute them in his neighborhood to help him. And that got such an overwhelming response by so many viewers.
I was sitting at my desk one day, and it's called Remake America. It's something that Yahoo's putting on. And there was a story about this gentleman who had owned a hardware store and needed help. And I was so compelled. And I saw all the comments. There are all these comments. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd comment and said, hey, I'll be happy to do something for you. And within a minute, you know, I got a response, and since then we printed some stuff for him. Our little video got over 380,000 hits.
That's wonderful.
And it was fantastic.
Folks would like information about Spring Dot, what's your website?
It's www.springdot.com, and that's our printing site. And then our Spring It Forward's www.springitforward.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Josh Deutsch. Josh is the president and the CEO of Spring Dot, which is Cincinnati's fifth largest commercial printing company and one of Cincinnati's long treasures. It's 108 years old. It's got a very long, rich history here in our region. And how do you distinguish yourself, and how do you continue to innovate and sustain growth in an industry which is very hard, I would imagine, to differentiate yourself.
The real trick is trying to take what we have in our industry and find customers who are willing to, A, trust us, because it has become a commodity. You know, there are a lot of folks in this business today who go for the low price. In all honesty, a lot of times that's what people buy on. Our company is 108 years old. It used to be you go meet somebody, shake their hand, you know, you have a relationship.
Sure.
And, you know, and that would build trust and get you, you know, in the door or whatnot. But today it's totally different. Today it's email, it's RFPs over the computer, requests for proposals. And we had to grow up as a company and continue to innovate. And innovate's the key term.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky because I was pretty young in our family, and my father gave me the opportunity to run our company. There are a lot of printing companies who don't have that new or next generation. And our industry is very capital intensive, so it takes a lot of money to keep it running. It's kind of a leap of faith to build a plan for innovation. What I mean by that is, you can innovate in several ways.
Mm-hmm.
One is equipment, technology. Two is people. Three would be services. You know, how do you continue to build services?
And that, I would imagine, is part of your competitive edge, is that you are able to do things for your customers very quickly that maybe a large organization may not be able to turn on a dime.
We've built our business, as we've continued to grow, on time. Timing and service. And quality, of course. Quality is always a constant in our industry. And we realized a long time ago that with budgets the way they are, people need things. They need things. And before we even know about them, they needed them an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we built and structured our entire organization. We make sure all the equipment that we purchase, everything that we have, fits into the I gotta have it yesterday mentality. My great-grandfather had a saying, feel their need, feel their passion. And that's really what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we breathe that and live that every day and every decision that we make.
Where do you see the printing industry going, given the fact that so much is digital? I mean, where do you see print media anymore?
Let me be clear. I don't think printing's ever going to go away. I think it will change. I think it has changed already. When I started 15 years ago, you know, talking about digital printing, you get that look like no one even knew what you were talking about. We see those opportunities. We execute on them, even though maybe it's not a total proven equation. And we've been very fortunate. Not only have we done that, but I think the more progressive companies that take advantage of the other services that our industry can provide, like fulfillment and online web development, that's really where the key is going to be. And it's going to be a total package. It's not mm-hmm. going to be, hey, I need some brochures. It's going to be, hey, I need these brochures. I need them. I
an
need
overall
them
solution.
Personalized, and yes. I need them shipped all over the country.
If people would like to learn more about Spring Dot, your website is springdot.com?
Mm-hmm. And they can always check out our Facebook page for Spring Dot or our community service program, Spring It Forward.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Aisha Armstrong. Aisha is the president and owner of MomCorp, and we hear so much about jobs and employment, and there's so many mixed messages. It's fascinating to me. On the one hand, we hear that we still have a high unemployment rate. But yesterday, for example, I was in a meeting and with my CEO roundtable, and three of the members were mentioning that they can't find good qualified talent to fill their open spots. What are you seeing in your organization?
Yeah, so I'm hearing similar things from clients that I work with as well. We're seeing two things. One is the increased importance of flexibility among professionals. So professionals looking for part-time positions or the ability to work from home or flex time.
Your company, MomCorp, is an organization that's a staffing organization, but you specialize in flexible workspace solutions.
That's right. So we focus on working with employers who have flexible work opportunities in the professional level. So that could be contract, again, it could be part-time or full-time with some degree of flexibility.
So the individuals that are coming to you and then you place them in organizations, are you seeing an increased demand for people as well? Or are you seeing a lot of people sitting on the sidelines without jobs that's not being placed through your organization?
No, we're very busy right now. So hiring is definitely picking up, I think, across all different areas and all different levels. And we're seeing more employers interested in using flexibility to attract a better caliber level of talent, and also an increase in employers who want to use contractors, not just at the entry level, but also at higher levels to help with kind of temporary needs that they have.
Is that a cost issue, or is that an issue that maybe they just don't need that type of talent on a full-time basis? They don't want to bring on that overhead permanently? Or is there uncertainty because they don't want those employees because they don't know what government regulations are going to come down and additional costs that will incur as a result?
I think it's all of those things, Crystal. So, for example, we're working right now with a venture-backed startup who's going through exponential growth, and they haven't really figured out what their long-term staffing model is. So they're using MomCorps contractors as a way to help them out as they're going through this growth. Will they try to figure out what's the best staffing model? Other organizations may need somebody for 6 months to help with a new product launch, someone who's got a great background in marketing. But after that new product has launched, they may not need that person anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's why they might use a contractor.
And the type of people that you have, that you're able to place an organization at MomCorp, are they four-year college degree individuals? Are they graduate?
Yeah, historically, most of our candidates are well-educated moms. And we've done data analysis on our candidate file, and it's people who have on average 5 to 7 years of work experience. Mm-hmm. Most actually have a graduate degree, and on average have been out of the workplace for 1 to 2 years.
So how does an organization choose someone? Do you give them resumes, and that's how they go about determining which of the people that are working with you they could potentially use?
Yeah, so with our clients, we do all the screening interviews for them. So we try to get a good understanding of what they're looking for from the job description and also the type of culture they have. Mm-hmm. And then we go out and interview candidates for them with the goal of providing them with a well-qualified slate of candidates that they can choose from.
In many sizes of organizations, but primarily even smaller organizations who may have a need on a short-term basis, they don't even know potentially what they need. They could never attract someone at that caliber and afford to pay for them on a regular basis. This was a great solution.
Yeah, especially if they don't have an HR department or they just don't have the time to look for this, we're a great avenue for them.
People would like to reach you. What is your website?
It's momcorps.com, and that's MomCorps with an S on it, like Marine Corps.
Okay. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Aisha Armstrong. Aisha is the president and owner of MomCorps here in Cincinnati, and we're seeing so many changes in our world, and one of them is just the way people perform work and the increased demand and value that employees place on flexibility. So are you seeing that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we ran a nationwide survey last fall of over 1,000 working adults, and it said just that. So we were looking at how much do people value flexibility when they consider an employment offer, and are they willing to trade compensation for more flexibility?
Because it really is a quality of life issue, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just moms, but it could be dads. It could be people who are maybe nearing retirement and just they still want to work, but not a traditional 9-to-5 in the office position. We're also seeing, and our survey showed this, that the greatest demand for flexibility is among millennials. So those would be people in their 20s right now who probably don't have children yet, but they really value flexibility from a lifestyle perspective. And we've even seen locally candidates who are maybe in their late 20s, who worked really hard for a few years, saved up their money, and then took a couple years off to travel. And now they're looking to get back into the workforce. And they're maybe facing the same kind of challenges that a mother might who maybe took off a couple years to stay home with young children.
And what about people who want to work remotely?
Yes, there's definitely an increased demand for remote workers, but not only by employees, but also employers, because it gives them access to a broader base of talent that maybe they couldn't find locally. So, for example, we were working with an internet publishing company here, and they wanted a PR person who had really strong ties to the tech industry. So we matched him up with a woman in Silicon Valley who works remotely from her house in California for this company based here in Cincinnati.
And for organizations who may be looking for really well-rounded, very good employees who may not fit their traditional role model, I mean, what advice do you have that for them if they are so dead set on having the traditional worker as we've had for the last 100 years, where they come to work at 8 and leave at 5, that just doesn't work necessarily in all circumstances anymore.
No, and it's really an outdated model. It would prevent them from getting, in my opinion, the best talent. It also doesn't give them the flexibility to get talent when they need it. So I would encourage them to think about experimenting with a more flexible opportunity. Start with someone who currently works at the organization, who's proven, and see if it works. And then think about formalizing that flexible work arrangement so all employees could take advantage of something like that if they wanted to.
If people would like more information about MomCore,
they should go to our website. It's momcore.com, and that's MomCore with an S on the end of it, like Marine Corps.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jill Meyer. Jill is the partner in charge of the Cincinnati office of Frost Brown Todd. I know your specialty at Frost Brown Todd is media and
advertising.
And advertising. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that businesses and employers should be alert to in terms of how they can get in trouble or how their employees can get them in trouble with social media?
It's a great question, Tom, because it's ever expanding and changing really by the day, because technology continues to change and people continue to get more creative on social media and with the technology that we now have. We spend a lot of time talking with employers about how to manage this wonderful opportunity, which also poses, as you say, a significant number of risks. I would say first and foremost is employers need to accept the fact that their employees are engaging in social media. That's the way we live now. And so to be thoughtful about who your employees are, how they engage either personally or on behalf of your business, but to very importantly get a policy in place, a social media policy that works and is practical, and make sure that your employees understand what it means and how you expect them to follow it and what is okay and what is not okay.
What advice do you have before someone just goes up and throws a website out there and starts putting all kinds of information? What should they do?
The beauty of the internet includes the fact that you can so much information at your fingertips, right? So if you venture into that world and you want to start creating content, you can find out pretty easily what's out there. You can cut and paste it, frankly, pretty mm-hmm. easily into your own site. But fortunately, the sites that also talk about ownership issues, those are readily available as well. So I would advise anybody who is creating content on a website, first and foremost, adhere to the fact that if there's something that exists already, somebody owns it. And you better find out who owns it first before you start to use it. And similarly, when you create content, you now own it, and the opportunities for people to lift it from your website are more readily available. And so again, creating policies, policing your intellectual property as it's out there, and being consistent in your follow-up to make sure you have tabs on it is probably the first step.
Well, isn't it sort of like email was 7 or 8 years ago? Even though it's easy to post things on social media, you still have to be careful about it, be thoughtful about it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's so easy to do it that they aren't thoughtful about it and get in trouble that way.
That is probably the single biggest area we're seeing right now where people get in trouble, is because it's so informal and it's so part of their everyday that people will say things over social media that they would never dream of writing in a traditional mm-hmm. letter, or frankly, even in an email now. And so the word of caution there is always to pause and to think about the policies and the formalities that you have for official communication, and understand that those really should apply to your social media comments as well, because the same laws do apply.
You know, I've read that some companies ask their employees for their passwords, their mm-hmm. Facebook passwords or their other social media passwords. Is that an appropriate thing for an employer to do?
You know, I would say that is a very hot topic right now being discussed, and there are pros and cons on both sides of it. The one side being, it's out there, we need to know. If you're giving this information out, we need to know what you're doing. The flip side of it is, as an employer, you do want to create a certain barrier and give your employees some privacy. There are some things you frankly don't want to know about your employees, and it's better that way.
Well, not only do you not want to know them, but how do you take in all that information that's probably out there?
As much as you want to find, you will find. And it comes down to the age-old question of, if you have the information, what can you do with it? What should you do with it? And frankly, what should you not do with it?
Folks listening would like to reach you, Jill. What's mm-hmm. your contact information?
Sure. They can shoot me an email, jmeyer, M-E-Y-E-R, at FBT, like Frost Brown Todd, FBTlaw.com, or call me at 513-651-6124.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Janet Hara. Janet is the Senior Director of the Center for Economic Analysis and Development at Northern Kentucky University. We hear a lot about how important it is to grow jobs, and certainly that's important and an important economic statistic. But how important is capital investment in the equation?
When we look at the last 12 months, what sector is leading us out of the recession here locally? And it's all about manufacturing. Well, one of the things that keeps America's manufacturing sector strong is the fact that we invest in new capital equipment, which makes us the most productive manufacturing workforce in the world.
In today's environment, the type of manufacturing they do are highly skilled jobs that take expensive equipment and very highly skilled, almost engineer-type personnel to run those machines.
Well, I think we still have this image of, you know, Rosie the Riveter with her rivet gun. That is not today's manufacturing. Today's manufacturing is very high-tech. It's typically very clean, and you need advanced skills in order to compete.
I would imagine as a region, if we could just focus on that, considering the fact that there aren't that many high-skilled workers to work in these manufacturing organizations, you'd think that that could really give us a competitive advantage if we could create more workers or help more workers become skilled to attract those advanced manufacturing businesses.
Well, as a community, we have to have a two-pronged approach to maintain and grow our manufacturing base. Number one is you need organizations like Triad that are actually actively marketing to bring new manufacturers to our region to expand our manufacturing base. But you also need to couple that with our universities and our training system to make sure we have a pipeline of skilled workers, because it's no longer, a high school education is no longer sufficient.
We talk a lot about economic incentives and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing from a policy standpoint. But for companies that need to make capital investments, if they're able to make greater investments through the use of economic incentives, doesn't that make them a stronger company that's able to sustain through recessions and really maintain their employment levels?
Incentives are a key part of economic development. For many companies, it's the deciding factor at the end. I mean, they have to make a business case to operate in your community first. But oftentimes they have two or three competing communities that make that business case, and the incentives can sometimes be that deciding factor to bring them to our community.
But what do you say, Janet, to those people that would suggest that if the government or other organizations are picking winners and losers?
Well, in a perfect world as an economist, I would say we shouldn't have incentives. But the fact is we do, and you have to compete within the operating environment we have. And the operating environment we have is that every state has a package of incentives. We have to offer them to, or we will lose out. It's one of those decision factors, because they have lots of options. They don't have one location to do business in.
Don't you also think that by offering incentives and that kind of thing just portrays a community as being open to do business?
It is part of the package. You have to have a competitive tax environment. You have to have the land that they need. You need a regulatory environment that's friendly to business. That you need, most importantly, probably, is a skilled workforce. But incentives are part of that package.
What do you say? What is the most attractive thing that businesses are coming to Kentucky for besides the financial incentives? Why do they like Kentucky?
I think the key is we have the skilled workforce they need, and we have a nice quality of life. I mean, if you think about it, we have small town living, and we're 10 minutes from downtown Cincinnati with all the amenities of a large community.
If people would like information, and they can find you on Cincinnati.com, but what's your website?
I always tell people, just go to NKU and look up CAD and you'll find us.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today our guest is Janet Hara. Janet is the Senior Director of the Center for Economic Analysis and Development at Northern Kentucky University. And you also write a blog on Cincinnati.com, Janet. And you recently wrote one about unemployment and sort of dived into unemployment in a little bit of detail. What is the overall trend in unemployment right now, just generally?
When you look at the unemployment rate over the last 12 months, it is coming down. We were at close to 10%. We're now more in the range of about 7.8%.
When someone thinks about employment numbers and the unemployment rate, it's deceiving in part, isn't it?
Well, I'm trying to tell people, it's not deceiving in the fact that they do it the same way every month, year in and year out. They've been calculating the unemployment rate the same way for more than 50 years. But most people don't understand how it's calculated. It is not based on the number of people that are going down to the unemployment office and getting benefits. That's not how they count it. They ask people through a telephone survey, are you or are you not working this week? If you are working, your count is not is employed. If you're not working, they ask you, are you actively looking for work? And if you are not actively looking for work, they don't count you as unemployed. Well, there's two things that are going on there. Number one is it doesn't take into account that people have just simply given up looking. I've been looking for 2 years. I can't find a job. I'm done. I don't look anymore. Well, if you're not actively looking for work, you're not counted as unemployed. And the second thing is the unemployment rate makes no distinction between someone who's working 5 hours a week and someone who's working 40 hours a week. So all those people that are working part-time that mm-hmm. want to work full-time are not counted as either unemployed or underemployed.
Well, there's a big difference, too, isn't there, between education levels and unemployment rates? In other words, the less educated you are, the more likely you are to be unemployed.
Well, this is the statistic I use to kind of illustrate that point. The highest unemployment rate for those people with a four-year degree during the entire recession was 5%.
But having said that, I thought I just heard something the other day that suggested that if you're a recent college grad, one in two will not have a job.
There's a difference there. We're talking about the people that were employed before the recession mm-hmm. started. Those people with a four-year degree were much, much less likely to lose their job than those with a high school education only. What you're talking about with the college graduates are people who are trying to get in their mm-hmm. foot
Just
in
get
the door.
In the workforce to begin
well,
with.
Well, there's not a lot of job openings right now, but we're starting to see improvement. So I suspect over the next 12 months, we'll start to see some improvement in those numbers.
Well, that's what I was going to go next then. Speaking of the future, where do you see the economy headed?
The business cycle has not gone away. We've been in a recession. Growth will come. It's going to come slowly, but it is coming. And so things are improving. They're not improving as fast as we would like. And one of the things, the last thing to improve usually is the labor market.
And that's not a bad thing, is it necessarily, that we're taking our time and getting back to a very stable economy? I mean, the way I'm looking at this is hopefully businesses and people are making good choices and good decisions so that in the long run that this economy will be very much sustainable.
For those people that are employed, you know, it is good news that the economy is starting to improve because they're more likely down the road to get raises and things. But it's really the good news is for those people who are looking for work because it gives them an opportunity mm-hmm. to get back into the labor market. But the other good news out of the recession is those companies that have survived are our strongest companies. So that bodes well for future growth as well.
If people would like information, they can find you at?
I always tell people go to cincinnati.com and look up for my blog.
Your blog.
It's the easiest way to find me.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.